morning, everybody. Good morning, wherever you are in the world. My name is Andrew Johnson, and I'm filling in with a friend of mine for Ralph Winterode, who will be back next week. Ralph's taking a break this week to go and watch some of the football that's going on this weekend, apparently, something which I know nothing about, so I can't comment. And I have with me Dr. Judy Wood, who is in the USA too, but I'm in the UK, and we're going to be talking primarily about things related to 9/11 tonight, but we may branch off into some other areas too. We will take some calls later on, and there may be some people who know the call-in number, which I'll read out shortly, but you can hang fire with the calls, because we're going to cover some other things first. And I think what I'm going to do is, until the music fades in, I'm going to start reading a passage which I thought was appropriate as a kind of background to some of what we're going to talk about today. And it's actually by a chap called Ralph René, who wrote a book in the 1990s called NASA Mooned America, which is all about how the moon landings were basically, you know, hoax and were faked, and he goes through a lot of evidence. But before he goes through that evidence, he actually has a preface and an introduction, and this is part of that introduction. And he writes in his book, "Over a decade ago, I wrote a column called One Man's Opinion for my local North Jersey Mensa newsletter imprint. At the local level, Mensa is primarily a social organization, but the qualification for membership is to score in the top 2% of the population on standard intelligence tests. The North Jersey group used to put out a good newsletter, but I soon discovered that whenever I attacked some sacred cow, particularly a scientific sacred cow, vitriolic, knee-jerk responses were triggered from people who were certifiably intelligent. I finally came to realize that my fellow Mensans were just as subject to failures in logic as are the rest of humankind, myself included. Our, brackets, what I call emotional belief system, or EBS, is the sum total of our inner philosophy. This evolves from the sum total of our life experiences. Our personal philosophies are basically emotional, because much of what we believe is not necessarily logical. Indeed, it may even be contradictory, but nonetheless, we make our decisions and govern our lives accordingly. Our EBS is implanted in our early childhood by cultural osmosis and authoritarian pronouncements. We are imprinted by our society's opinions in the same way a baby duck is imprinted by the first moving object it sees after hatching. Much of this imprinting is due to religion, which is one of the great moulders of societies. Then add our early education, what we are taught or not taught, and our parents' influence. This is the process by which we eventually come to know right from wrong, good from evil, success from failure, and stool from shinola and shoe polish. Have you ever wondered how a man from a third world country wearing a pair of tattered trousers can be so pleased with himself, even though his ribs stand out from hunger? How can he feel so fine, knowing that the great number of children he has sired will be as dirt poor as he is? The reason is that in his society, the very act of siring marks him the success he is. Logical? No. Emotionally satisfying? Yes. Our EBS is reinforced by education, most of which takes place before our critical faculties develop or our logic centres mature. Our imprinted opinions can vary from era to era, from country to country, or from county to county. These influences cause our philosophies to vary according to sex, religion, status, occupation, or even physical and mental attitudes. As I said before, EBS represents the sum total of our lives. No two lives are identical, so the fringe layers of our inner philosophies are as individualistic as our fingerprints. But unlike our prints, which are fixed at birth, our personal philosophy can and does change somewhat, as a response to each day's new experiences being filtered and compared against the old. And that, as I say, was from a book called NASA Mooned America by Ralph Renné. Those weren't my words. And it's basically, to me, quite a good way of describing how, well, describing the reasons, really, when we start to talk about some of the topics we're going to talk about tonight, or some of the topics that Ralph talks about, people just can't handle it. They can't take in what we're saying. They look at us with strange expressions, and, you know, we really can't get across what we're trying to convey to them. We cannot get that across. I'd like to now bring in Dr. Judy Wood, who is with me on the line, and I wondered if you've got any response to that. We may get cut into by the music.
Yes, I'd like to comment. That is a really great thing that you read. I'd like to add to it, though, the sense of conformity, that people tend to conform, and they assume that what everyone else is doing must be right. And they just bend to that, what they think is... otherwise, why do we have fashion?
Right. And I think, you know, one of the things we found is, you know, we don't conform in a number of ways, particularly in, you know, what we've come to know about 9/11, for example, where a large proportion of the population conforms to what they think is, you know, what they've been told, basically. But then we've also encountered in what we've been doing in the last 7 or 8 years now, a new kind of conformity that's been put into place, which is essentially, you could call it the 9/11 truth movement. And people within that group feel that they have to conform to what other people are now putting out. We're going to talk a little bit about some of that, in that we've got some updates to what we talked about. Well, I think it was almost a year ago now when Dr. Wood and myself did a similar thing, and we filled in for Ralph. And there's been a few developments since that time, which I'm going to talk about. I think it's basically to do with covering up the truth of 9/11. And there are, for people that have not heard me speak before, and heard Dr. Wood, there are essentially two layers of cover-up in relation to 9/11. The first layer of the cover-up is the official story, you know, with the Bin Laden story and the planes crashing into the towers and the hijackers and all that nonsense. And when you begin to scratch into that story, it very quickly falls apart, as I began to discover in 2003. But then once you scratch through that, you encounter another layer of cover-up, which is populated by... It's populated by, well, really some quite strange people that you find out that seem to have a very strange agenda, in that you initially come into this, as I did, thinking that you're dealing with people that want to know the truth, and they're willing to carry on looking for the truth, even when they think, you know, even they think they might have initially found it. You can show them something which proves that what they originally thought cannot be true. And you go through this kind of weird process whereby I have people that I once counted as friends. They knew that the official story of 9/11 was false. But when I tried to explain to them what I'd now come to understand, they weren't interested. So we're going to go for a break now, and there's going to be some commercials, so we'll be back in about, I think, something like 3 minutes. Hello, morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world, or good afternoon, wherever you are in the universe. My name is Andrew Johnson, and I am filling in for Ralph Winterode, who will be back next week, and I'm with Dr. Judy Wood. And we are primarily talking about 9/11, because that's an area of research that we've spent a lot of time involved with. And in the introductory segment, I'd read out a piece by Ralph Renné, who'd written a book about the the Apollo moon hoax. And it's interesting to note that when I did a discussion on this on a UK TV program, I actually got more emails about the Apollo program that we did than I did about any of the other topics, including 9/11. So it's one of these areas which really seems to touch a very strong nerve with people. I think
it's filled with belief.
Yeah. And it's in common with 9/11. A lot of the information is put forward as if it's scientific, but when you actually get down to it, it is it's based on belief. And another thing I wanted to bring up, because as I say, we did do a program I think almost a year ago, and myself and Dr. Ward, we've essentially been documenting the cover-up of 9/11. And I've been documenting the cover-up specifically of what Dr. Wood has been saying over the last, since about 2006, arguably before, but that's when it became a little bit more public. And one of the things that came out a few months ago, in fact it was around the anniversary of 9/11 that it came out, was a new fictional novel, which was by a lady called Rebecca Roth. Now, this looked quite interesting to me because the novel was basically said to be about, based on the real knowledge of a flight attendant who was serving as a flight attendant around the time of the events of 9/11. And she claimed to know some of the people that actually were involved as flight attendants in, you know, when the planes went missing and so forth. And a YouTube video appeared, which was an interview with this lady. And she claimed in this video that she was one of the foremost experts on research into 9/11. But when I checked this video out, it was a video which was done for something called the Writing Room. But I couldn't really find much about this so-called Writing Room podcast or program or whatever it was. I did find, I think, a restaurant in New York which had the name Writing Room, but I couldn't find any associated, podcast or anything associated with this. So that was a bit peculiar. But I decided that I would get hold of the Kindle version of the book. There was an Amazon Kindle, one of these digital versions of the book, which I bought and I downloaded and I read it. And it was quite an interesting book. It was, the first half was basically, just like a romance novel almost. Quite engaging. It was fairly easy read. It was fairly good English and things like this. It was good English. There's no problems with the English or anything like that. And then it started to unfold into the experience of this character that she'd had on 9/11 as a flight attendant, and she was trying to explain what some of the problems were with the stories about the planes and the plane crashes. And essentially she contended that the planes had been landed somewhere and that the people had been taken off the planes and so on. And when I heard the trailer for this video, this interview, it sounded like there was going to be quite a lot more information about the planes and passengers in the book than there actually was. When I actually read the book, there wasn't a great deal of information.
Nothing new.
No, there was nothing particularly new. And people can read this. It's available on Amazon. I think it's about, $8 or something. I can't remember what the price is. It's not particularly expensive. But I wanted to find out specifically if there was any mention of Dr. Judy Wood's research in this book. That was one of my keen areas of interest in this. And, of course, I'll read you what I wrote, because I posted a review on the Amazon site which people could go and read if they want. But I'll just read a portion from that review that I wrote, because I'd written that in this book, more troubling is the inclusion of a physics professor named Jonas and his peer-reviewed scientific paper about thermite being used to destroy the towers. Similarly, The towers are described many times having collapsed in the book, this is. The research of Dr. Judy Wood, not mentioned or referenced anywhere in the narrative, shows the towers did not collapse. They mostly turned to dust in midair. It seems the author is not familiar with my own research into this area of 9/11 evidence, that the thermite story was implanted to distract people away from the evidence which shows what happened to the towers. And I have evidence in spades that this is true. In other words, that the thermite is a bogus story, and unlike Dr. Wood's research, none of the thermite evidence was put into a court case, i.e. those like Jonas promoting this evidence actually know that they are lying about it. And this is one of the key things that you're going to have to come to terms with when you study this. And then there's this president's speech at the end of the book, which is it's quite engaging, and it's sort of written, I think, to appeal to the masses and make people's kind of, you know, give them a feel-good factor at the end. But it really misses out.
They live happily ever after.
And they live happily ever after kind of thing, yes. But, of course, there's no talk of the energy issue. There's no talk of energy weapons, and there's no talk of the towers turning to dust. There's no talk of Hurricane Erin, for example. So we did discuss that book, didn't we, Dr. Wood, at the time. We discussed it a little.
Right, and also no toasted cars.
Right. So there was an awful lot that was missed out. And I posted this review, and, you know, there was no real response from the author. I've not heard from Rebecca Roth, personally. I don't know whether anyone else has.
I don't think she's written anything before or since that I can tell.
Oh, no, that's one of the things. There doesn't seem to be a history of this person. She said she's a foremost researcher, but, you know, I've been researching into 9/11 for, well, essentially 10 years now, really, and I'd never heard of this person before. You know, I'm familiar with at least the names of most of these researchers, even if I've not sort of corresponded with them or written about them or anything. So people can go and read that if they're interested, but at the end of it, I have to say, to me, it seems like just another part of the cover-up, really.
To me, it seems like they like to give people a choice, either or. If they don't like choice A, then they assume B is correct.
Right.
And so, you know, if people decide the official story doesn't make sense, then they assume that this other alternative story has got to be correct. And as long as, you know, it keeps them there, that's fine. But it's important that they not see that there's other choices.
So, absolutely. And this is, you know, to keep people going in circles is one of the objectives. Introducing doubt, that's one of the key ones. This kept people going in circles. And, you know, we hear, and in fact, somebody said this to me a couple of days ago on Facebook, you know, oh, we just need to agree that the official story is false, which is essentially what Dr. Wood was saying just there. And, you know, you get that so much that people just think, oh, we just need to, you know, disagree
then
with
what?
The official story, and then, you know, that's it sorted. And we're going to talk more a bit about this in a couple of minutes, because I think we've got another break coming up now. And we'll speak to you soon. Good morning, good evening, wherever you are around the world, or good afternoon. My name's Andrew Johnson, and I'm with Dr. Judy Wood, and we're filling in this week for Ralph Winterode. He'll be back next week. He's decided to go and have a look at some of the sporting events going on this weekend, and we wish him well with that. And I've just paused for a minute and thank Ralph for everything he's done with the legal challenges he's been making over the years. I think it's a very important area of work that he's been doing, and it's very, very difficult. He's made a lot of sacrifices, and I think we've got him to thank. Certainly we, myself and Dr. Wood, thank him for what he's helped us with directly with the 9/11 research. So I'd just like to say that here now. We will take calls probably the next hour, the number to call is 800-313-9443, and we'll probably take calls the next hour. We were talking about the 9/11 cover-up, and I'm also going to probably play a clip shortly because we've seen this ongoing attempt to cover up Dr. Judy Wood's research as well as the events of 9/11 itself, or themselves. I've written a book about that. It's called 9/11 Finding the Truth, which you can download for free from my website, which is checktheevidence.com. And you can just Google my name, Andrew Johnson, 9/11, Finding the Truth, and that'll come up and you'll get a free download. And there's a PDF download and there is an audio download as well. So you're welcome to look at that and write to me with questions. If you have any questions, having read it, I'm always happy to receive those. And Dr. Judy Wood has written a fantastic book called Where Did the Towers Go?, as listeners to this program will probably appreciate. That is still available through Amazon, and it's available from me in the UK. So, you know, we're still sort of sending those copies out to people that are willing to pay for them. I've also sent out a number of loan copies, and a number of review copies have been given away over the last few years as well. It's a recommended read for everyone. We get people writing to us saying it changes their world. In fact, I'd like to talk a little bit about that later if we get time. But I think for now we are going to talk about the cover-up. And I think, again, I'm going to go a little bit back in history to, again, about September last year, because we had this character who goes by the name of Dane Wigington, and he runs a website called geoengineeringwatch.org. A little bit of a mouthful, but what geoengineering is it's basically engineering the weather. It's to do with changing the weather using artificial means, and there's a lot of talk of this now. It's maybe not something that's come up on Ralph's program very much, but I have a particular interest in it. I've had an interest in it since 2004. You know, people talk about chemtrails and, you know, things related to that. Are the two related? Are geoengineering and chemtrails related? Some say absolutely yes. But then again, some people say absolutely there were bombs in the World Trade Center, and we now know that that's almost certainly not true. There were explosions, but there were no bombs, as I understand it. So with geoengineering, we have to again look at the evidence, which Dane Wigington doesn't seem to have done a very good job of, because it came to my attention back in, I think it was September the 27th, that Dane Wigington had a certain guest on, a guest who's been on this program too, Mr. Richard Gage. And what I'm going to try and do here is I'm going to play a 2-minute clip of Mr. Wigington speaking to Mr. Gage, and I think you should be able to understand quite quickly why I'm playing this clip. So I'm just going to fiddle with my settings here for a minute, and you should hopefully hear this in a moment.
With the whole 9/11 issue from bottom to top, again, there is really nothing that supports the official story, and everything supports the conclusions that your group, and again, how could you have a stronger group than that, 2,200 people? And there's a lot of, I know there's a lot of disinformation. We talked about this off the air, a lot of people that want to grab at straws, and they grab it, you know, I've seen information, the laser beams from space and all this sort of stuff that is simply designed to make people reject the actual facts. We see the climate engineering of people trying sorts of fringe things to cloud the issue, the disinformation. But in this case, there is, when you have 2,200 plus architects and engineers signing their credibility, how could you have any more weight than that? And so I hope people that have heard lots of other peripheral that have confused them, look at 11 A&E. That's the nuts, bolts, facts that really cannot be argued in any way, shape, or form. So on this, Richard, I know that some of these other theories that appear to have been thrown out there for this clouding issue, right? But they're not really making progress with that. I mean, I think you guys have really gained the lion's share of credibility and attention.
Well, I think so, and that's because we're looking at it scientifically. Regarding Judy Wood and her theory of directed energy weapons, she does the site around the towers and tries to find, to try to support an unusual theory, that she doesn't even know what evidence would support that theory, because we don't know anything about directed energy weapons or how they work. We don't even know if they exist. We know they're experimental programs. But in the process, what Judy Wood does is deny the scientific forensic evidence that we do have for nanothermite, which we haven't even discussed yet on this call, but it's small red gray chips of high-tech nano by an international team of scientists led by Neil Parrott in Copenhagen, which nanothermite should not be found in the World Trade Center dust.
Okay, so what you heard there was Dane Wigington, who runs geoengineeringwatch.org, talking to Richard Gage, who runs...
About laser beams from outer space, and they think that discredits their movement. Well, then why is he talking about it?
Right, and I just want to point out here something very simple initially. What I've done there is I've played a clip from Dane Wigington and Richard Gage. I've actually played the clip. So you can hear what they actually said. You will never hear Richard Gage in any of his presentations playing clips of what Dr. Judy Wood actually says, right? He will misquote her. He will lie about her. Now, if you go and look at my website, you will see that I have a copy of a check signed by Richard Gage, drawn on Architects and Engineers for the 9/11 Truth funds, paying for a copy of Dr. Judy Wood's book, Where Did the Towers Go? You will also see on that same page a copy of the contents page from that book. And you will see that Dr. Wood's book goes through the evidence for thermite and all of those things that Richard Gage says that Dr. Judy Wood does not address. So this proves, plain and simple, Richard Gage is a liar, and Dane Wigington is a liar too. Now, it may just be that he hasn't had time to read the book, but if so, he's
either. But to make a statement, he's still lying with that statement.
Right, he's agreeing with the lies, and he's a very careless researcher because he hasn't actually even taken the trouble to buy a copy of this book or borrow a copy, or even ask Richard Gage to borrow his copy. I mean, they seem to be friends. Why doesn't he ask to borrow a copy and look at the contents page? Instead, he repeats this propaganda about Dr. Wood's research, which is laser beam from space. And oddly, Richard Gage sort of corrects him and says directed energy weapons, and then says they don't exist, or you know, words similar to that.
I think what's going on there is that you know, they said they spoke off air beforehand.
Yes.
I think it's so that Dane Wigington can make these statements about laser beams in space, but Richard Gage used a different word, so he can't be held accountable for it. It's plausible deniability.
Absolutely. And another thing, I've listened to that clip a few times now, but what struck me when I was listening to it just now was that he mentioned this Niels Harrit, the Danish chemist who claimed that there were tons of thermite in the towers on a news broadcast. He has also come onto the radar screen again, I think, today, hasn't he, on this other website, which we'll talk about shortly. But it's interesting that they don't mention Mr. Jonas, Stephen E. Jones. You know, they don't mention him in that clip, and it was actually him that came out with this thermite theory in 2000.
He also came out with laser beams from space.
He did, yes, yes. Oh, well, we're already at another break. I was slightly taken aback there, but we will be back after the break, and we'll talk to you some more. Drew Johnson, and I'm filling in for, we're filling in for Ralph Winterode, who will be back next week. If you wish, you can look at my website, which is checktheevidence.com, and Dr. Judy Wood's website, which is unsurprisingly called drjudywood.com. And Dr. Judy Wood has written a book called Where Did the Towers Go?, which I recommend you try and beg, steal, or borrow a copy of, and if you read that book, you will come to understand exactly what happened to the World Trade Center on 9/11, and it will give you a new perspective on life. We may even get to talking about that aspect of it. We, just before the break there, played a clip of a chap called Dane Wigington speaking to another chap called Richard Gage, and Dr. Wood and I had discussed this before some months ago. We discussed this clip already, and I just wanted to return to that clip where Dane Wigington actually says, he says in the clip, we have one person, Dr. Judy Wood, ignoring evidence and disputing literally not just 2,200 experts, but many more when you count all these other first responders that heard explosions. One person denying who knows how many, 2,500, 3,000 experts from various fields, which would people be reasonable in believing? Obviously you guys are standing on solid ground. Nobody else is. So Dane Wigington is lying in several ways there, because Dr. Judy Wood isn't the only person doing what she's doing. We have Dr. Morgan Reynolds. He did something similar. He hasn't written a book, but he did start a court case. And then Dr. Eric Larson, he wrote the foreword for Dr. Judy Wood's book. He doesn't get a mention by Dane Wigington, so that's also wrong. I'm being slightly facetious here, of course. And these 2,500, 23,000, whatever experts, that number's wrong anyway, because it's just a petition, and many of these people, we don't know what their actual qualifications are. Whereas in Dr. Wood's case, I think we do know what Dr. Wood's qualifications are. We've spoken about it a number of times on this program already. But have you got any comments on that, Dr. Wood?
No, it's, except that, you know, you think about how many times my book has been peer reviewed. We're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands, you know, orders of magnitude. More readers of my book than they have people signed up on their, whatever it is, petition. And so if you want to count for how many people agree with what, whatever, you know, the people who've read my book, I find nothing wrong with it, except it shakes their world.
Right.
That's the only problem they have with it.
Absolutely. And one of the things, there's a couple of things I've almost forgotten to mention, but, you know, you're presented with a false choice all the time. We talked about giving people a false choice between the official story and then thermite or nukes or some other story. You know, and you were typing in Skype, weren't we? And you were saying that it's like saying, well, you know, we just need to get people to agree that, three by three isn't seven, and then we're okay. You know, I don't know if you want to express that, what you were typing to me earlier on.
Let me see if I can get back.
Because, I mean, you were basically trying to draw a very simple analogy in this false choice, weren't we?
Like if the official story is 3 times 3 is 4, and then the truthers come out with 3 times 3 is 6. Well, you know that 3 times 3 equals 4 is wrong, so therefore the assumption is that 3 times 3 equals 6 must be correct. So don't listen to that idiot over there telling you that 3 times 3 is 9.
And this is essentially what's going on. It really is. And people should think very carefully about this.
Not only am I saying 3 times 3 is 9, I'm showing it 10 different ways.
You're showing the actual roots, you know, in that calculation. Obviously, we've made it facetious and simple, but in the book, you show that whole process of how you get to the answer. You know, you don't just state it, you show it. So this is important that people realize. So in other words, to understand that, you've actually got to go through the book. If you don't go through the book, or you don't go through the videos that have been done and everything, you won't get it. You won't understand it. And this is very important that people go through.
It isn't about the answer.
No.
Actually, I'm known in my teaching to if your work doesn't support your answer, you get a zero on the problem. I was pretty harsh about that, because it's not about the answer. It's about the process. If somebody got the wrong answer, but everything's laid out there perfectly, I can even tell exactly which numbers they punched in the calculator incorrectly. I've been known to take off 1/100th of a point. And right. You know, rest than that, get a perfect score, because it's so important to understand what you're doing. And I think someone had also asked this question about laying things out. You know, the first serious engineering course, I call it boot camp. Get in this habit of laying out the problem. Define your problem. What are you looking for? What's being asked for? What are you given in the problem? And then draw a line across the page. You know, you have what you're looking for. Draw a line across the page. And then you start solving it. And if you get into that habit, the problems sort of solve themselves.
Yeah. Well, I think what I'm going to do, Dr. Wood, is I'm going to now go into some of the questions that I've received by email. We'll probably get interrupted in a minute.
Well, but I'd like to add one more thing about that.
Sure, but before you do that, I was just going to say that one of the questions relates to just what you were talking about then. It's literally that exact thing. So you carry on and add it, but then I'll maybe go on to this.
Yeah. That it's so important to define the problem first, yeah, rather than assume it. If you don't define what problem you're solving, how can you solve it? And yeah, and that is the biggest trick I first saw as to how a cover-up is run. You get people to assume the wrong problem, and they can never, ever, ever solve the actual problem, as long as they're working on an assumed problem that's incorrect.
So what that leads perfectly into this question from Matthew that he sent to me, and he was referring to this, that, you know, this is engineering 101 you're talking about there, right, mm-hmm, there. And what he said is, he's asked in his question is, how much more difficult is problem solving if we fail to define the problem properly? And how does this play into the 9/11 cover-up and cover-ups in general? That was his question.
Exactly. It's impossible to solve the problem if you haven't defined it. Because
right,
then you're just following wherever your imagination and belief systems want to take you, and that's not solving the problem. That's dealing with your imagination. And another nifty part of this with, I don't know if it's nifty, but that how the cover-up is run, you get people to jump to how it was done or why it was done. Everything but what happened. What happened is identifying the problem. You can't,
yes,
solve it until you determine what happened. So if you're looking at who did it, you know, and how they did it, it was thermite, it was bombs, it was nukes, it was this, that, and Bin Laden did it, no, George Bush did it, and all of that round, never gets you anywhere.
So, absolutely, and what I was going to add to that is that the cover-up can stay in place if you don't encourage people to solve the problem. In other words, if you
to identify
prevent,
the whole problem,
yeah,
that needs solved.
Yeah, exactly, so if you can prevent the problem-solving process from happening by, you know, preventing people from identifying what the problem is, then the cover-up can stay in place. You don't have to worry.
Yeah, you get them to jump past that and say, it was thermite. Well, okay, what was thermite? It was. What's it?
Yeah.
I don't
exactly
know, whatever it was that happened. Huh? You know, they can't tell you what happened or what the destructive mechanism was.
And what I found is as well that, you know, if you're having these discussions with people and you're trying to work out their motives, one of the good questions to ask them, and I did this today with somebody who popped up on Facebook, I said to them, "And what problem are you trying to solve?" And if you ask people that question, typically I found that they either come out with just some gibberish, or they come out with an honest answer.
No, they go silent.
Or they go silent, yeah, exactly. So that's a good question to ask people and really pin them down on it. And another point that Matthew had made, or it was at sort of the end of his question, is that the 9/11 truth movement is essentially being trained to dismiss what you've been saying, what Dr. Wood's been saying, in the last few years, without bothering to actually look at it. And a number of people have written to me this, as well, I heard of Dr. Judy Wood a few years ago, and I'd never even looked at it, I just assumed that it must be wrong, you know. And then
because
they've
that's
actually,
what we were told.
Exactly, they were trained, they were encouraged into that not solving, not looking at the problem, not looking at the evidence. And this is essentially what happened to me as well, as I've written a little bit about in my book. So that was Matthew's question and or point as well.
That brings me to this thing with like this deal with Niels Harrit,
yep,
saying, well, she doesn't know what she's talking about. Nobody understands her. Nobody knows what she's talking about. Has he even read my book?
Right, right.
That's like a first grader saying, I don't know how to add, so therefore that author of that or arithmetic book must be wrong, because I haven't read it.
Exactly, exactly. And We'll talk more about this after the break. It's going to be a longer break now. Neil Tarriott has been doing this for a long time. But we'll talk about that more after the break, so we'll speak to you soon. Well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world and the universe. My name's Andrew Johnson, and I'm with Dr. Judy Wood. And you can visit our websites. Mine is checktheevidence.com, and Dr. Judy Wood is drjudywood.com. And she's written a book called Where Did the Towers Go.com. And we did say we'd take some callers. So I think we're going to do that because we've got Kenny. And I just ask that callers, you know, stay on point, keep things nice and concise. And, you know, if you've got a question, frame it as best you can. And we'll try and answer that as best we can. So I think we can now go to Kenny in New York. Are you there, Kenny?
Hi, Dr. Wood and Andrew. Thank you so much for all the work you've done and compiled in your book. It is absolutely, you know, it's indisputable if you actually read it. I don't want to keep on the topic of these irrelevant hacks, shills, or whatever with their government paychecks. I want to talk about your work and why it's so important, okay?
Okay.
We are very close to extinction of 9 million species on the planet. We've created 300,000 tons of nuclear waste with no plan to keep it out of the environment. Meanwhile, we saw what they demonstrated on 9/11, which implies this free energy technology that could possibly solve these problems. I'm not sure. I mean, we may be too far down the road with the amount of methane that's being released and all of these 40 positive feedback loops. You know, we're looking at 4 to 6 degrees C by the middle of the century, you know, and with all of this nuclear waste needing cooling all the time, I just plead with scientists to come up with a solution, because any kind of disaster, natural disaster, a war, whatever, that cuts off power to these nuclear plants, which there's 400 plus around the world, that's 400 Fukushimas, and that's endgame. So thank you so much for bringing the data about this technology that was demonstrated on 9/11. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and I think, you know, a lot of people are worried about the same sorts of things you are, you know, and I suppose I am too. And I think what the research in the book shows, essentially when you think about it and think about the implications, is that all of the things that you've mentioned, I think are like that because somebody wants them to be like that, somebody we don't really know, because... You know, one of the, just to give you a quick example, one of the bits of research that John Hutchison was doing and has been doing was how the technology that he's developed can be used to, you know, mitigate or neutralize some of the effects of radiation. Nuclear radiation. And it appears, for example, that the cold fusion, what's called cold fusion, that's a nuclear effect. Processes which are involved with that, which also seem to have some kind of relationship to what happened at the World Trade Center, that also could be used to for example, neutralize the effects of nuclear waste, or most of them. But of course, until people understand that this stuff is real, this technology is real, and it's not just a scientific mistake or pathological science or whatever name you want to give it, you know, we're not really going to, I don't think, see that being employed as a solution. So you're absolutely right that we need, you know, to get people thinking, well, how do we solve these problems? And take a look over here, folks. We've got the solution here, but we need to get these people who know about it held to account somehow, because we don't know who these people are, but we know that somebody knows, I think, but that's safe to say. You can comment, Dr. Wood.
Yeah, the message of my book is, once you've read it, you look at the cover, it becomes clear that this technology exists that can do what got done. You know, the majority of the building turned to dust in midair. Therefore, a technology that can do what got done must exist. Think of all the good we could do with that same technology. Instead of destroying buildings, we could provide free energy to the planet. But people have to recognize that and want it. You mentioned about, you know, you hope some scientist comes up with a solution. Well, they have, but the solution is out of reach until, you know, people demand it. And if the majority of the people opened their eyes and looked at what happened in 9/11 and saw what was before us, you know, look at the cover of my book and say, wow, that's what happened. Therefore, somebody has this technology they're keeping from us. And actively get involved with getting that to be used for good instead of evil. Oh, I can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yep, now I can. Yep.
In that clip we played earlier in the program.
Mike, you're breaking up quite a bit. For some reason you're breaking up. I get about one out of every four syllables.
Okay. Well, connection.
Read some parts from my book. Bottom page 153 for those who want to read along with me. And it's some first responder testimony that is always kind of interesting that I find. This is from Chief Fire Marshal Richard McKay. He said, this is right after one of the towers turned to dust. He said, somebody, which actually helped me, I don't know who it was, after somebody said, I can't breathe, somebody, I don't know from which direction it came from, screamed out, don't panic. Or they screamed, relax. Relax. It's not smoke. It's just dust. Just relax. At that point, that's when I started to realize my mouth was filling up with like a sandball. All of a sudden, I realized when whoever said that, now I'm starting to pay attention to my surroundings. I realized there was no heat. And you could breathe.
Can you hear me now?
Yep. Stuff was going in your mouth, but it was like a cool air coming in when you could breathe it. So I said, maybe he was right. You couldn't see. It was gritty.
Okay.
If it's fire, it takes the oxygen out of the air. If it's smoke, it takes the oxygen out of the air. This did not take the oxygen out of the air. You could breathe.
Okay, we're going to go for a quick break. I think I'm back on now, and we should be back in a few minutes. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world and the universe. We are filling in for Ralph Winterhout. My name is Andrew Johnson, and I have with me Dr. Judy Wood. And you can look at my website, which is checktheevidence.com, and you can look at Dr. Judy Wood's website, which is drjudywood.com, or you can read her book, Where Did the Towers Go?, which is available from wheredidthetowersgo.com. Now, I did get cut off in the previous segment. I think there was some audio breakup, which I wasn't aware of, but apologies for that, but we seem to be out of our control. And we were talking, I think Dr. Wood had read out a segment which I didn't hear, but I did have some questions that I wanted to go through which had been sent to me by email when I posted that we were going to do this broadcast. And one question came from Ron, and it related to the caller that we had, what he was talking about, I think, because the question from Ron was, how does Dr. Wood see directed free energy technology being applied for peaceful purposes? You know, have you any particular thoughts on that at all? Hello?
You're back.
I did read out a question.
You're on the air.
Okay.
I think I lost Dr. Wood.
Okay. Sorry, okay, well, we seem to have, again, some technical gremlins here, unfortunately. I may have been reading out a question which went on air. I'm not sure whether it did, but this is a question from Ron. I was hoping to get a response from Dr. Wood, but she appears she's dropped off the line. So we'll just carry on. And what I wanted to talk about...
Oh,
you're back now.
I'm here.
Okay, did you hear the question, Dr. Wood?
Yes, I did.
If you could answer any thoughts on how directed energy, free energy technology might be used for peaceful purposes, for good purposes, what are your thoughts on that? This is a question from Ron.
If it's not being used as a weapon, then it's being used for peaceful purposes. If it's not being used for evil purposes, but if people don't know about it, then they don't know when it's being used. The way I see it, the easiest way to get it implemented is if it's no longer being written off as ray beams from outer space beams, laser beams from space, you know, being ridiculed. Mm. If it's not ridiculed, then we can see about implementing it. But as long as it's being ridiculed, like if people out there who think the Earth's not flat, how dare you? You know, and as long as you keep with that mentality, the Earth's flat.
Yeah, and I think there is a psychological problem that needs to be solved here somehow, and I don't know how to do it, but, you know, before we can...
Look at the evidence.
Yeah.
The evidence shows what happened, and once you understand the evidence of what happened, this is the demonstration of this technology.
That's right. So, I think it's difficult to pick out examples for something which is, as Ron says, you don't like to speculate, and I know you don't like to speculate, but I mean, the way I would answer that question is that it would transform most aspects of our lives because we wouldn't be necessarily having anything that runs on any type of fuel, for example. I think there is a very, if you look at the evidence, I think, in the book and elsewhere, you'll see that gravity is involved. So, and we get these levitation effects, which is essentially anti-gravity. So think about what effects on society anti-gravity technology would have. And, I mean, I could do a whole other program on that, but we're not talking about that tonight. And another question from MJ. He'd said that you get criticised, Dr. Wood gets criticised, for using the term toasted, as in the toasted cars, and he just wondered,
I use the term for toasted as in it's toast,
that's
it's
right.
History, something happened to it.
Yeah.
You have to get another one, you can't fix it, it's beyond
hope.
Yeah,
I mean, he thought, did you mean total, but when you say totaled, as in cars, that's a different meaning, really, isn't it? Because it normally means you've crashed it, or you've you know, you've wrecked.
Yeah, because it has a unique meaning already. And I tended to use phrases that didn't already have a specific meaning that jumped to your mind, but more of a general term that wasn't a foreign term, like dustification. Well, even though that isn't a word, it's clear what it means.
Absolutely.
It'd be familiar, just like, you know, it's toast.
Absolutely.
It's history. You know, he's got to get another one. Or somebody's career is toast. It's just, you know, it's done with.
Absolutely. And then, there was a question from Alan, and he was wondering, I mean, this again is more speculative, but we did talk about this before. And he's talking about what other countries really know what happened on 9/11. In other words, who knows what we know and are not talking about it? Which other countries know about this? Any thoughts on that?
Most of them.
Yeah, I would say.
Most of them.
Yeah.
And I think of various countries as being like the states within the United States. You know, the governor of each state is, you know, they understand what's going on with the government in another state, and they have their own club. And it isn't like they're going to go, take over, like Louisiana is going to take over Alabama and Mississippi. That's not what, you know,
doesn't work like the kind of things they do. Yeah.
But they can be in cahoots with each other about, governing their citizens.
Absolutely, and I think there are certain mechanisms which seem to be used internationally, and we can show that the cover-up of your research is international, because I can name names, and I have named names, who appear to be working in this country with exactly the same agenda as Mr. Wigington and Mr. Gage, and of course, Mr. Harriet is Danish, so this proves that there are people in these countries who are working to the same agenda.
People in Australia.
Yeah, and in Australia too. And there was a good question from Atahan here, and I think it's kind of a sort of not an entirely serious question, but he's asking, do you think that Colonel John Alexander and Colonel Tom Bearden have read the Where Did the Towers Go book? So,
they probably don't need to.
They probably don't, do they? I mean, people don't know who these two people are. Colonel John Alexander is, a figure that pops up on alternative knowledge programs such as Coast to Coast and so forth. And he actually worked on the remote viewing program in the 1980s, the so-called Psychic Spies program. And he also went to visit John Hutchison in 1983 and saw John Hutchison's experiments then. So he's known about John's experiments since that time, and Colonel Tom Bearden has written a lot about these so-called scalar weapons and scalar technology.
Oh, he has seen my website and made like one or two statements,
right?
You know, or maybe one line about it, saying, "Yep, very well could be."
Yeah,
and just kind of bit his tongue after
right,
that.
Very non-committal, wasn't he? And I think Jesse Ventura tried to get him involved in that program that you did with Jesse Ventura a couple of years ago, didn't he? And that didn't really come about, did it? So.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so I think I've probably covered most of the questions that we'd been sent. Oh, there's one more actually.
I'd like to make a statement just to emphasize this again. The cover of my book, you know, the title, Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Well, the buildings mostly turned to dust in midair. Therefore, the evidence in my book, including that evidence, shows what got done. So it's evidence of a technology that exists that can do what got done. That evidence shows a technology that can be used for other things other than evil purposes. It can be used for providing free energy. That's where what that means. It's sort of like the silver lining in the dark cloud. Evidence of directed free energy technology on 9/11.
Right.
So it's evidence of what happened in 9/11, but it's also evidence of something good that can come out of it.
Absolutely. Well, we've got another break now, so we'll be back in 2 or 3 minutes, and we'll speak to you then. Well, hello, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world, wherever you are in the universe. My name is Andrew Johnson. I have with me Dr. Judy Wood. We're talking primarily about 9/11. and the cover-up of that event and the cover-up of Dr. Dewywood's research into that event. And you can visit our websites. Checktheevidence.com is my website, and drjudywood.com is Dr. Wood's website. Now, we were going through some questions that had been sent to me, and I've got a question and a sort of some points being raised by Hillary, and she said, I'd like to ask if both Dr. Wood and yourself, with reference to WTC 1 and 2 destruction, will kindly bring in the discussion about why one of today's academic engineering departments, you know the one, I won't reveal what it is though, insist on dedicating nearly a quarter of an assignment to asking the student to explain energy conservation in order to focus on later calculating the impact energy by an object when you know the drop height of a specific mass onto a fragile commercial product to satisfy a test method for a BSEN standard. That's BS is British Standard. It then goes on to ask for the calculation of the velocity. Of course, I don't want any hints about the answer, as I've already done this, but the nature of this question is very subtle. In the subconscious mind of the student, aware of 9/11 and maybe questioning it, knowing the official story focuses on collapse as the demise of the towers, a student may then try to calculate the energy at impact and attempt to hypothesize an example of a kinetic energy force hypothetically dropped directly above one of the towers to begin its destruction using the known values of the tower height and certain formulas rearranged. Hillary says she remembers in a previous show Dr. Wood was discussing the subject about how post 9/11 physics textbooks insist on showing how important it is to calculate the energy used for the student to understand that an impact or destruction actually occurred. And clearly this negates the desire to be able to empirically show something. So if the energy cannot be calculated, the towers never went away in 9 seconds, faster than the acceleration due to gravity at 9.81 metres per second squared. I never fail to be amazed at the effort to hide the existence of weaponized free energy technology used on 9/11. So I think to summarise that, Hillary is saying they tried to get you to focus on the calculation, not on the observation. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Dr. Wood.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So many people are hung up on calculations. Like, you know, remember the Greg Jenkins thing? He wanted to know, you know, if I calculate how much energy was required to destroy the buildings. Mm. Well, what does that tell you?
Absolutely.
You know, what are you making these calculations for? Just look out the window and see if they're still there.
Right.
If they're gone, then there obviously was enough energy.
You know, I mean,
of whatever form.
Absolutely, and I mean, you know, obviously calculations are necessary for certain things, but not for actually looking at the
observations.
Yeah. I mean, it's like trying to do calculations to, you know, you stick your hand out of the window and it becomes wet because it's raining. Do you need any calculations to establish the energy of the water droplets, you know, falling on your hand to know that it's wet? You know, you don't. It's ridiculous. So I think that's a very good point and observation that Hillary has made there, with how the focus of study in science can be used as a way of shutting down some of your other intellectual faculties. And I think with just that, we've now got another caller.
Yeah, people are trained to make calculations rather than to think.
Okay, that's it. That's exactly what we're saying. We have a caller from West Virginia, I think Ollie in West Virginia.
Oh, cool.
So can we bring Ollie on?
Hello.
Hello.
I've read your work, and I just found it fabulously interesting. I have read some of Bearden's work. I read Ferdinand, and attempted to struggle through his concepts and principles of free energy. I'm still working on that. Anyway.
Well, do you pay an electric bill each month?
Beg pardon?
You pay an electric bill each month?
Well, yes, I do. Yep.
Well, imagine if you got that kind of energy without having to pay for it. See, that's
yes,
free.
I know. I know.
So that's all I mean by
years.
That's all I mean about free energy. It's like, you know, you're not stealing it. It's just free for the taking without stealing it.
Well, anyway, I read your book with great interest, and I understood it. One thing I didn't quite understand was why you did not interview Rodriguez. He was on the basement floor, I think he said, in the first one of the buildings, and he described, and I've met this fella, he described how the floor seemed to go upwards, as if there was an explosion underneath his feet. And I just thought, I just wondered why you did not interview him in your book.
I was working with evidence that I could observe myself, or as far as the first responders go, that's under oath that they gave their statements, and so it, also the further out you get time wise, people start remembering what they think they're supposed to remember. It's not that they're lying; it's that they try to conform to what they think is the right answer. I've noticed about Mr. Rodriguez is his story has changed over time quite a bit. You know,
it was within about a year, you know, within the time of the event. I had occasion to meet him in Washington, D.C. And
one particular thing that struck me about it, he was saying, he saw several of the hijackers in the towers, in a bathroom, taking measurements a month before 9/11, you know, as though they were seeing if they could park an airplane there, you know.
Oh,
Why would they be taking measurements in a bathroom?
I may also add, Ollie, that I actually met Mr. Rodriguez as well. He actually came to stay in my house in 2007, so I got to sort of meet him and talk to him at some length, actually. And if you'd like to email me after the program, or even now, if you go onto my website, checktheevidence.com, and you click on the contact button there. What I'll do is, if you email me, I'll send you a link which is specifically about Mr. Rodriguez, which I think you might find quite interesting.
Okay, so I would appreciate that.
Yeah, because he's definitely an interesting character.
Anyway, thank you, Dr. Wood, about the marvelous work you've done.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate hearing from you. Thank you.
I will hang up and continue to listen to your discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. So
looks like we have another caller.
Is that right? Do we have another caller as well? If we have another caller, then certainly we can speak to another caller. I'm not sure. Oh, Jerry, yes. Jerry in Chicago. I didn't see that. Sorry.
So, good evening, Dr. Woods and both of you. Thanks a lot for taking my call. Hey, you had a caller call in a few minutes ago worried about the nuclear radiation and everything else like that if the power were to go off. I have a friend of mine that is a number two controller at a nuclear power plant right here in Illinois. And he had told me that they have got a stockpile of diesel fuel to run those generators to keep the water circulating in the cooling ponds for at least 2 years.
Right.
Which I found to be kind of incredible, because those would be some very, very big tanks. Mm. And now,
yeah, imagine if they lit up.
Yeah, well, here's the other thing, too, is he's also the one, he just told me last Saturday that radiation your body needs radiation. And I says, well, which type of radiation?
Exactly.
The C-137 or the 134?
Right, or the, UV light or whatever from the sun.
Right, and I mean, this is what he was getting at. And I told him, I says, listen, I says, three strikes the nuclear industry is out. I says, we had Three Mile Island, we had Chernobyl, and now we got Fukushima. When are people going to wake up?
Yes.
And the way I understand it is they could have chosen to use thorium.
That's right, yes.
Instead of plutonium or uranium, and thorium, after 1 year of being down and everything, would have been 100% biodegradable, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right. You know, you're right about that. And we know from what we've been studying that there are a number of alternatives like that. It's not the thorium reactors is not something that Dr. Wood and I have discussed, but I've discussed it with other people, and it's another one of these viable technologies which has essentially been marginalised and covered up. And I think in the case of the nuclear industry, the reason why its nuclear industry has been allowed to proliferate is twofold. One is it creates a lot of toxic waste, which you have to spend a lot of money on managing, so that a lot of companies can make money out of that. And the other is, of course, the more obvious one, is it can be used to make nuclear bombs. You know, the plutonium can be used to make nuclear bombs. So I think those are probably the two main reasons why the nuclear industry has been allowed to proliferate. Okay, well, we've got another break there, so we're going to come back for this final segment in a few minutes. I think I've got one more question from that was emailed in to me to go through. And if there are any more callers, please call in and we'll try and get to your call. So we'll see you and talk to you in a few minutes. Well, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. We're filling in for Ralph Winterode this week, and you're on here on RBN, and Ralph will be back next week. I have with me Dr. Judy Wood, and her website is drjudywood.com, and my website is checktheevidence.com. And you can write to me through that website, just click the contact button, and I'll try to answer any questions you may have. And yeah, I just wanted to return briefly to something we'd said earlier on, because I did have a question from Jason, but we actually, I think, answered it, because he'd asked, I've got Dr. Wood's book, I've read it, it could be maybe I need to give it another read to remember if what happened on 9/11 is actual evidence for free energy technology, or that it simply resembles it. Why is it free energy technology and not just simply a new form of technology? Is it because it resembles technology of the type that Hutchison discovered or was demonstrably free, or are other reasons why it must be free energy technology? Many thanks and keep up the great work. So that's from Jason. Well, we did sort of cover that already with some of the other questions. You know, essentially the technology did what it did, and the way that the energy was released or was used or
rearranged.
The closest we can get to describing that is really, I think, is to use the word free. It was coming from somewhere, not from a conventional source like, you know, burning diesel or petrol or, you know, this sort of thing.
No, it doesn't have a meter on it.
It doesn't have a meter on it. So, you know, I think you get a feel for it when you study the cover-up of this sort of technology. And I think we may have another caller, so let me go back to
no calls.
Okay. All right, so we've now got a few minutes left, probably about 5 minutes left, and I wanted to talk about what some people have experienced having read the book. You know, and I found that this, when you've actually understood this and you've actually grasped it and you've got to grips with it and you know what happened on 9/11 with regard to how the World Trade Center was destroyed, it's actually difficult to convey this to other people. And one of the problems is that there's this phrase, it's easier to fool someone than to show them that they have been fooled, right? So it's very difficult, for example, to explain to people that have followed Richard Gage, for example, to show them they've been fooled. It's very, very difficult.
Again,
yes, it gets harder. And I've even heard people say that, for example, even if it were true that no planes crashed into the towers, I wouldn't tell anyone. You know, that's not what you do if you're in some kind of process of telling people the truth. You don't decide to not tell them the truth because they're not going to like it.
Lying for truth.
Yeah, it's lying for truth. And that people say the same things. You can't talk about energy weapons. It's just people won't understand it. Actually, that's not been my experience for those that are willing to listen. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the
people understand evidence. You can see what happened.
That's right. You must stick to the evidence to show people what the truth is. And when you go towards speculation or you go towards insults or ridicule, you're going away from the evidence. You know? And you'd have to leave people to decide how to deal with the implications of that evidence. Some people don't want to listen. Some people don't want to know.
And it's evidence. It's not theory, speculation, ideas, whatever. It's evidence.
That's
evidence that anybody can look at and come up with the same conclusion if they're honest.
That's right. And I think one of the problems that, you know, becomes apparent is that the implications of what you find is so enormous that it causes a fundamental shift in your consciousness if you really get it in, you know, if you get to grips with it, if you understand it. it really changes your understanding of how the world works and what's really going on. And this is this was expressed to me as well in another message I received, I think, about a week ago. That, and I kind of experienced, like, you go through a barrier, you go into another place, and you see this bigger picture, and it becomes clearer, it becomes more real, and it's like you've gone through this barrier, and there are very few people that are on the other side of this barrier, and the view is very, very different. The view of the world is very different. And some people have an aversion to getting through this barrier, and they're looking at other directions. This is why much of what we're talking about becomes a personal journey, and you become you have a personal transition or a transformation, even, and you can't direct.
Well, it is somewhat analogous to realizing that the Earth is spherical, somewhat, and not flat.
Right.
Even if everyone around you is saying the Earth is flat.
It is very much like that. It's very much like that. And often you can't directly convey this feeling to anyone else because they haven't seen what you've seen. They can't understand what you understand because they haven't seen the evidence. They haven't worked through it all. They haven't put it all together. You know, it's a bit like when you're trying to explain things to maybe a younger child and you realize that they don't have the life experience and understanding to, you know, understand what you're trying to explain to them, you know, because they've never experienced it. And another problem really is the cover-up itself. The cover-up is so enormous that people can't accept, for example, that people like Dame Wigington and Richard Gage are actually part of the cover-up. You know, they can't accept that. They cannot accept why these people seemingly, you know, seem to have made sacrifices, are actually part of the cover-up. It's very difficult for people to come to terms with that. And, you know, and I get accused of, you know, attacking people and so forth. And it's just, that's not what I'm doing. I'm showing people that what they're saying is not true. That's not the same as attacking somebody. I'm trying to illustrate that they're not telling the truth, which, for when they're running a truth movement, they should be telling the truth. Now we have another caller. It's Matt in, I think, SD.
South Dakota,
yes. I'm not so familiar with these abbreviations for US states. So we could speak to Matt if he's still there. Matt's still there.
Hello, Matt.
Just wanted to make a quick comment regarding actually reading the book itself. I am more of a YouTube junkie, and I had watched both of you done a lot of videos together on YouTube. I've watched them all many times and kind of put off getting and actually buying the book for a while because I figured I more or less knew, you know, the gist of Dr. Wood's research and yours as well, Mr. Johnson. However, I really wanted to urge anyone out there to actually buy the book, because there's so much more in there than has been conveyed in the YouTubes, as informative as they are. And so any of you out there on the fence about it, just buy the book, read it again, and it's hard to explain how it will change your paradigm. So thanks again for all that you do.
Read the book now. You did get the book?
I have. I've read it. Just got done reading it a second time, and the second time, really, it just crystallized even more, especially the seismic data.
Great. Well, Matt, I really appreciate your call. It's great to hear from you, and I'm glad that, you know, you've actually taken the time. I mean, somebody popped up on Facebook, you know, and he was saying he didn't have time. He was wanting to ask a question, but he didn't have time to look at the link that I sent him, you know. And you're at the opposite end of that. You've taken the time, you know. You started off with the videos, and you thought, right, I'm going to have to get the book and look at it. And you've now hopefully got the benefit from that. I know it's a very disturbing picture which emerges, but hopefully internally you feel that, you know, you've now, as you said, you've got this new paradigm to work from. And you know,
One other quick comment. Sorry to interrupt. One other quick comment, if I may. It's just a pleasure to hear you. You were mentioning how you weren't attacking Mr. Gage, and I agree. I have a Facebook page where I actually spend a great deal of time sort of attacking Mr. Gage. However, I feel like I'm just holding him accountable for the statements that he's made. And the truth is, he's either incompetent, or a liar. And I have a hard time believing he's incompetent. So it's not like I enjoy thinking of him as a liar, as well as, Dr. Jones and Alex Jones, David Ray Griffin. I mean, that's not what we want to do. But when you look at the evidence, and when they're not willing to talk about half of the evidence, it is what it is, and we have to call it how it is. And it's not always fun and pleasant, but we just have to press on to the truth.
You're absolutely right. I couldn't have put it better myself. So I really thank you for saying that.
Having read the book, you probably also realize that the idea of thermite, coming down from the sky, toasting the roofs. There's plastic lights or polycarbonate lights on the police cars on the roofs that aren't melted, but the inside is fully toast.
When you realize, I believe the thermite garbage for a few years, and so I'm kind of sheepishly embarrassed that I wasn't able to figure it out sooner. But when you really turn your brain on and think about it.
Okay, Matt, well, thank you very much. We've got a wrap now. That's great. Lovely to hear from you, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Dr. Wood. And maybe we'll do this again sometime. Thank you so much, everyone, and thanks to people at RBM.